got a lot of different things coming at you today, okay? And I'm just sensing a little bit of a lull right now. That. We don't got time for that. All right, let's go. Crank it, Glenn Cross. Woo!
Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? I've just been handed an urgent and horrifying news story. And I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
You're listening to Rock Chalk Sports Talk with Nick Schwert on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN.
What's happening? Welcome in Rock Chalk Sports Talk on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. I'm Nick Schwert with Derek Johnson. Happy to have you with us on a Thursday afternoon. I've been thinking because this keeps coming back into my consciousness every time I watch a sporting event. And last night, watching the NL wildcard game, anytime I hear a boo, anytime I hear a fan booing, it gets me thinking about this again. That booing at a sporting event is one of the most barbaric things that you could ever do. And it would be barbaric no matter where you're doing it. It doesn't matter if you're at a sporting event or if you're in your everyday life. It would be more barbaric if you're doing it in your everyday life. Like if you were at the grocery store, right?
And the cashier's taking too long.
No, the woman in front of you is like rifling through her purse, trying to find a coupon. She's taking forever. She can't
Boo!
Find it. Boo! Move it! Like, let's pick up the pace. Boo! Can you imagine if that was just a... Because in the sports world, booing is universally accepted as part of the routine. Like, it's going to happen at every single sporting event you're at. There will be boos. But what if that was just the way of voicing your displeasure, right? You can voice your displeasure at a sporting event because you paid for that ticket. And that $50 that you paid to get into the event gives you the right to voice your displeasure in any manner that you'd like.
So hold on. I went to KU. When I was at KU, I was paying for classes. So if I don't like what the professor is saying, if I don't like a question on the test during the middle of the test, do I just boo?
Yeah, that's a good question. Because it's the same concept, right? You pay for a sport ticket, you pay for your tuition. But that's the difference, is that sporting events, there is not a level of decorum that is expected from the people in attendance. Whereas in a classroom setting, there is. And it just kind of goes back to this whole idea, and you could take this any which way you want to, about a lot of different things that are going on in sports that people are talking about right now, is that, you know, if you're booing people during the national anthem for kneeling, you feel as though you have that right. You have the right to boo those people. How about with Marcus Peters being yelled at something, and who knows what was said to him by the fans behind the Chiefs bench, but enough to make him angry and turn around and say, bleep you. Bleep you, bleep. Does it matter what that fan said to him? Does that fan have the right to say whatever he wants to Marcus Peters after Peters gives up his second touchdown of the game? Is that fan within his rights as long as he's not using racial slurs? Does that fan have the right 20 feet away from Marcus Peters to yell, Peters, you suck, get it together, you're a bum, what's your problem?
Here's the issue. You have the right to, but I've always viewed it as, let's imagine you're just walking down the street and you see this guy. Would you say that then? You would have the right to. Legally, you could, but you wouldn't.
Of course you wouldn't. Of course you wouldn't. It's the same concept of when you're driving down the road and the guy in front of you cuts you off, or maybe he almost swerves into your lane because he's not checking his blind spot, and you honk the horn, you flip him your middle finger, and you're cussing in your car. You bleeping idiot. You stupid son of a bleep, right? There are so many things that I have screamed in my car at somebody else that, of course, they can't hear me. And, of course, I'm not going to park my car and that guy's not going to park his car and we're going to get outside and talk it out. Of course that's not going to happen. You say things knowing there are going to be no repercussions. Like, right, there's a good Louis C.K. bit about that. Like, if somebody almost swerves into your lane and says, and you say, you, you stupid son of a bleep, what's your bleeping problem? What if you're in an elevator and some guy gets some guy gets in and he just kind of runs into you, right? He just kind of accidentally stumbles a little bit and he hits shoulders with you. Are you going to turn to that guy and say, like two inches away from his face, right? You turn to him, you go, you stupid son of a bleep. What is your bleeping problem? You're going to run into me like that? Are you an idiot? Of course you're not going to do that. Because it would take a lunatic to say that to somebody in an elevator. Because they didn't mean to. It was an accident. Right? The same way that if you get caught behind a school, a city bus, right? And that bus has to get over, right? Because they have to hit that stop. They can't pass the stop. That guy's got to do his job. Sorry, he's going way slower than everybody else, but that's just like part of the routine. Sorry it makes you mad, but he's got to do his job. Some guys are better at their job than others. And maybe you pass them and you look at him, you give him a dirty look, and you're like, you idiot, you moron. Get behind me next time. Guy's just doing his job. Marcus Peters is just doing his job. Sometimes he's not going to be good at it, right? Marcus Peters isn't going to be great at his job every day. Does that give you the right to shout from the fans 20 feet away? You idiot! What's your bleeping problem, man? And we don't know what was said to Marcus Peters, but you've been to a sporting event. You've heard the types of things that some fans will say at other players, and sometimes their own players. And Marcus Peters is probably not amongst the most popular Chiefs fans in the kingdom right now, right? Because, well, he didn't have a good game, and on top of that, he was one of two guys who was sitting during the national anthem. And if you're somebody who is offended by people sitting during the national anthem, you couple that with the fact that he didn't have a good game, yeah, he might be the target of your vitriol. And if you're offended by it and you want to show that displeasure, I think you have that right, but I don't think you should be surprised that Marcus Peters is going to turn around and say something back. I don't think that Marcus Peters has anything to apologize for. Now, it's within the rights of his employer. It's within the rights of his teammates, his leaders, his captains, whether that's Alex Smith or Andy Reid, to say, hey, man, don't do that. Don't do that because that's not what we do. And it's just not a good idea. It's never going to end well. You're never going to come out on top. You're never going to come out and say, man, I won that. I win. I win because I turned around and let that fan have it. No. Because they're just going to turn it on you. They're going to turn it on you, call you immature, saying you're getting paid big bucks. You shouldn't be interacting like that with the people who pay good money to come and watch you play. It's a slippery slope, but again, like, it goes both ways. Marcus Peters wasn't just responding to somebody who was booing, right? I guarantee you the guy who he said bleep you to wasn't just going, boo! He probably had something to say. Marcus Peters had something to say back. And I don't think it should surprise anybody. It's 314 on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. KU, after the bye week, hosting Texas Tech on Saturday. They should be able to put up some points, man. They really should. Because outside of the Eastern Washington game that Tech played in week one, they played Arizona State, Houston, and OSU. Oklahoma State last week was 3 yards shy of 600 yards of total offense. 597, 41 points. Houston, 427 yards, 24 points. Arizona State, 494 yards, 45 points. This is not a good defense that KU is facing. It's really not. Now, they have forced turnovers, 5 against Houston, 1 against both Oklahoma State and Arizona State. Tech and KU, in terms of their secondaries, right? Because we look at KU's secondary, that is their weakness. What's going on? There's tons of youth, tons of inexperience. They can't stop anybody. Shane Morris is coming in and setting records against KU. Almost identical to Texas Tech secondary. Both teams are averaging 310 yards, giving up on average 310 yards through the air. That's tied for sixth worst. They are tied with one another for sixth worst passing defenses in the FBS. The only difference is Tech forces turnovers. That's it. Forcing 2.5 per game. That's seventh. That's seventh in football. Think about that. Tech didn't have a good defense. They just forced turnovers. They got playmakers. KU's got playmakers, don't they? Right? I don't think you're looking at KU and saying, can this become a really stout defense? I think you're looking at them and saying, hey, they're going to give up numbers, they're going to give up points, but they're going to force some plays, right? They're going to go out there, make plays, force turnovers. That's it, man. That is it. There's no need to complicate things with this football team. Can you take care of the ball, and can you make some plays on defense? You do those two things, you can beat this Texas Tech team on Saturday. You do those two things, you can beat this Texas Tech team on Saturday, and you're going to be in some more games the rest of the way as well. Take care of the ball, force turnovers. That's it. Because we can talk about personnel, we can talk about inexperience, we can talk about whatever you want to with KU's defense. They don't need to be a shutdown defense. They're not going to be a shutdown defense. They don't need to force six or seven three and outs every single Saturday. They just need to make a few stops in critical situations. They need to force some turnovers. That is it, man. And they've got the guys to do it. When you have that defensive front, you should be getting after the quarterback. If you're getting after the quarterback, the turnovers will come. Whether you're forcing him into bad throws, whether you're hitting him when he's throwing, whether you're forcing fumbles back there, you get after the quarterback, good things will happen. They've got playmakers on defense, but they've just been really quiet throughout the first month of the season. And that's something that's been talked about a lot, clearly, but they just got to continue to work in that direction. KU's losing the turnover battle by five this year. That's 119th in the nation. Compare that to Texas Tech. They're winning the turnover battle by seven. That's the difference between these two teams. That's it. KU's got a good offense. They have an underwhelming defense, but they're not forcing turnovers. You can have bad defense and still force turnovers. Tech doesn't have a good defense. They don't get a ton of stops. They aren't a good unit. They just force turnovers. They make plays. And offensively, they only have three turnovers through four games. They're taking care of the ball. If you look at KU's offense, they're averaging just a hair over 32 points a game, which is really good. That's top half of the country. There are more offenses in the country that are worse than KU than are better than them. But losing that turnover battle is keeping them from being up around 40 points a game. And if you're up around 40 points a game, we're not talking about a team that could be looking at another winless Big 12 slate. We're looking at a team that's going to be in virtually every game they play. I know it's easier said than done, right? Of course. You got seven interceptions so far for Peyton Bender. But for the purpose of this conversation, there's no need to get fancy and talk about all of these different things that are going wrong. Talk about the offensive line. We can talk about the pass catchers, the running game. We can talk about the defensive front, the secondary, the linebackers, the run defense, whatever, special teams. It doesn't matter. Like, let's just simplify things for once. Force some turnovers, take care of the ball. You don't have to do it every single week. No one's expecting you to do it every single week. Do it against a Texas Tech bunch. Coming in on Saturday, expectations weren't high through the season. Yes, they've looked better than what people expected. But that defense is giving up yards. That defense is giving up points. And KU has an offense that's done both of those things. They've put up yards. They've put up points. There's no reason why that should stop. So if we can accept that much, the KU should be able to move the ball. The KU should be able to score some points on Saturday. How do you score just a little bit more? You take care of the ball. You get some turnovers on defense. Give yourself extra opportunities to score. It doesn't have to be a perfect storm where everything comes together on one Saturday. Just do a little bit. Force two turnovers. You will notice the difference. Jesse Newell came on yesterday and said it, right? Every turnover you force in college football, on average, that gives you 5 points, right? So a touchdown one drive, a field goal in the next drive. KU's offense is good enough to do that. KU's offense, unlike maybe in years past, where they couldn't convert points off turnovers, where the defense was doing a fantastic job, but the offense just couldn't hold up their end of the bargain, the offense can. They can hold up their end of the bargain. You don't have to do it every week. You don't have to be one of the best playmaking defenses in the country every single week. Just be a really good one for 1 week. Just do it for 1 week. 1 week, and then try and do it again the next week. I know this may sound way oversimplified, but I don't think you have to make it too difficult when talking about this defense. I really don't. I think the opportunities are there. You just got to go and find them. I'm Nick Schwartz, Rock Chalk Sports Talk on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. Hear from David Beatty coming up next.
This is Rock Chalk Sports Talk with Nick Schwartz on new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN.
333, new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. Coming up at the top of the 4 o'clock hour, I don't have to tell you why Cam Newton's a dummy. I'll just play you the audio, and I think we're all going to come to a pretty unanimous conclusion on it. But I think we're talking about it the wrong way. We'll get into that at 4 o'clock. Benton Smith of the Lawrence Journal World joins us now on the program. Benton, KU getting back at it against Tech on Saturday. And this is a Texas Tech team that's looked better than I think a lot of people expected them to through the first month of the season. But the same things kind of persist with this program in that they're going to put up a lot of yards and a lot of points. They're going to give up a lot of yards and a lot of points. So for a KU offense that's been better than they've been in the past, I mean, there should be an opportunity for them to put up some points and stay in this game. But I think it's really going to come down to, can you take care of the ball? Can you force a few turnovers? And that might just be the formula for them the rest of the way out.
Right on it right there. I mean, I think the Texas Tech defense is a little bit better this year than it has been. But, I mean, that's obviously not a very
right.
high bar to clear. But I think just talking with some of the KU players, talking with Peyton Bender, talking with Doug Meacham, I think they got this. I got the sense from them that the Texas Tech defense is maybe a little bit different than what we're used to seeing. So maybe not just like the gaping holes in the secondary that we kind of saw the last couple of years. But you're right about the turnovers on both sides of the ball for KU. I mean, for KU to win a game at some point during these next 8 weeks, they're going to have one of those days where they have a positive turnover margin. You know, there's no interceptions thrown by Peyton Bender, no fumbles lost by anybody, which they've actually done a pretty good job of. And also the defense actually has a big day on that category and actually creating some stuff, creating some interceptions or fumbles or, you know, maybe getting a sack here or there or some hurries that kind of create a little chaos for the opposing offense.
What do you think is of more importance? Because, I mean, David Beatty talked about both things on Tuesday at his press conference. Peyton Bender's got 7 interceptions. You're going to have to cut down on those if you want to stay in games. But this defense just hasn't had a ton of takeaways. And maybe that's expected because of the inexperience that you've got in the secondary. But with that defensive front, if you're getting after the quarterback consistently, good things are going to happen. If you're forcing bad throws, if you are altering throws because you're hitting him when he's letting it go, if you're getting those sack fumbles, like, good things are going to happen if you get after the quarterback. So when you look at that turnover margin, do you see maybe the easier room for improvement to be on the offensive side of the ball for KU or on defense?
Well, I think it's probably the easier side to take care of the ball is on offense, because I think I just talking to Meacham today, he mentioned a lot of those interceptions. What Peyton Bender had 7 at this point. He said, like, on 3 or 4 of them, basically, a receiver was not exactly running the cleanest route. And, you know, and then that kind of led Bender to throw the ball into an area that's a little bit more dangerous. And on a couple of those interceptions, too, there's been kind of fluky plays where, you know, Steven Sims tries to make a play on the ball, gets a hand on it, and then it bounces, like, directly into a defensive back chest. And I think, you know, Quan Hampton, like, went up and made some crazy catch up high, and then before he got to the turf, just had the ball kind of taken out of his hand. So, I mean, some of those interceptions have been kind of weird. Like, I feel like they're the kind of ones, like, if you were playing Madden, you would swear the computer is cheating you over, you know?
Yes,
but
I do know.
But we've all been there. So I think that's kind of I think that's why it might be easier for the offense to clean it up a little, and then the defense kind of ratchet it up a notch, and maybe you'll see that turnover margin kind of swing back in KU's favor a little bit. But Texas Tech has actually been really good at takeaways and really good at taking care of the ball. I think they're like 6th in the country in turnover margin, whereas KU is down in the 120s. So, I mean, the KU is going to have to, like, totally reverse its fortunes to against a team that does those things well to have a shot to win.
And I know you wrote about this earlier this week, talking about the improvements that the KU offense has made this year under Doug Meacham, and they're pretty obvious at this point. Mm-hmm. And it's past the point of arguing that this offense just isn't working and it's not better than it has been. But it just seems like they can move the ball as much as they want, and we can compare it to years past as much as we want to. But until they do start taking care of the ball, none of it's really going to matter, right? Like, Peyton Bender can put up these big passing yard games, but if he keeps coupling that with those 2 interception games, with those critical mistakes and those overthrows or those missed reads, like, it's all going to go for naught at the end of the day.
Yeah, yeah. Like, if you look at his numbers through four games and then project them for a 12-game season, you know, that'd be, what, like 21 interceptions on the year? So
right.
That's obviously not something you would want to see. So I think you're right. I think cleaning up that part of the game is critical. If KU's going to steal a game here or there at some point during the last part of the Big 12 schedule. And it's kind of funny because, I mean, I think ahead of the season, everybody who follows the team kind of looked at this Texas Tech game. It's like, well, there's one you can get. It's in Lawrence. Texas Tech has that bad defense that we're used to seeing, and KU is supposed to be better. So I think a lot of people maybe even assumed back in August that KU would win this game. It's funny how things have changed just from the non-conference portion of the schedule totally, like, flipped everybody's expectations for a lot of things.
Yeah, we're talking to Benton Smith of the Lawrence Journal World here on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN, because I think if you look at Peyton Bender's numbers individually, it will kind of tell you everything you need to know about this offense, because you can look at the fact that, wow, this guy's, you know, amongst the top half of Big 12 quarterbacks in passing yards, but then you see he's leading the conference in pass attempts, and then you see right. He's near the bottom of the conference in completion percentage, and that kind of tells the story of the offense, right? Like, yeah, they're having to throw the ball a ton because they're coming back a lot, and there just hasn't been a ton of efficiency. There have been good numbers,
right.
And they're scoring the ball, but it just doesn't seem like they're operating as efficiently as you'd want to.
Yeah, and I think, like, week by week, Meacham's getting a better feel for, like, where the strengths are with this offense. And obviously, the air raid isn't associated with, like, a run-heavy offense, but he showed that he was adaptable against West Virginia, at least, and against that 3-3-5 scheme to just kind of pound the ball on the ground and let Khalil Herbert just, you know, carry the ball, what, 36 times or whatever it was. And between him and Taylor Martin and a little bit of Dom Williams, I mean, it was just a dominant rushing attack. So I think that Meacham isn't opposed to running the ball, and that's a good sign. And I think, like, the deeper we get into this season, maybe we'll see Bender's efficiency numbers improve now that KU knows what it has in Khalil Herbert and knows that they can have some success on the ground, and they don't have to, you know, throw the ball 60 times.
Would that be, I mean, like, you talk to Doug Meacham every week, like, clearly he knows they've got something pretty special there in Khalil Herbert, because you don't just have a one-off in a game like he had a couple of weeks ago. Like, yeah, you're not going to expect 300 yards from him every single week, but clearly you've got something there. How do you kind of, if you are a guy who is known for running this air raid and you've got a ton of weapons on the outside, like, how tough do you think that is to try and balance that while also knowing, okay, we've got to find a way to get Khalil Herbert more involved?
Yeah, I think that's kind of the unique challenge that he's facing. So I think at his other stops, they've had a little bit more of a sound group to work with, groups that kind of had success when he got there. And he had, you know, he wasn't just working with a completely new unit of receivers and quarterbacks and running backs. And I think there was maybe a little bit more established offense when he was, you know, running things or co-coordinator, I guess, at TCU in Houston. So I think that the learning curve is part of this, and I think he's done a great job of adjusting, because he hasn't just stuck to something because he wants to do it. You know, he could have just said, yeah, we're just going to pass the ball and we're going to ignore Khalil Herbert. I don't care if he had a good game at Ohio, but instead they featured him prominently against West Virginia, and the guy had an amazing day and, you know, almost had them in the game in the fourth quarter. So I think just the farther we go in the season, probably the more balance that they'll find, or they'll find the right timing to throw the ball and run the ball and kind of find a rhythm for mixing that in.
Now, you wrote about this, I believe it was today on KUSports.com, about Dalen Charlotte. People were asking the questions after week one about where is this guy? And now I think, you know, a quarter of the way through or a third of the way through the season, people are still kind of wondering, all right, where's this dude we heard all about in the offseason? And he is down at the very bottom when you look at KU's receiving statistics. Are you still optimistic that he's going to make his impact and let it be felt at some point this year?
Yeah, I forgot to tell you before I came on the air with you that I'm actually calling you from Dalen Charlotte Island, and I am the only inhabitant of the island, and I'm super
holding
optimistic.
Strong.
Yeah. I mean, the weather's rough. I've been out of food and water for a while, but I'm still believing. No, I think that he is going to have an impact, and I think it could be, you know, as soon as the next few weeks. If you listen to Doug Meacham and believe what he's saying, which I do, he's saying that Daylan Charlotte is actually starting to practice a lot better. He was injured for most of August and maybe even a little bit into September. And according to Meacham, at least, the guy who knows Daylan Charlotte and what he's capable of really better than any of us, he's liked what he's seen this week. So I think that's a big positive. And I just believe in that guy's talent. I mean, I know we haven't seen a lot of him other than the spring game, and spring games don't really mean that much in the grand scheme of things. But I just think eventually he's going to find his way onto the field, and it might be a case just like Khalil Herbert, where, you know, you actually get a game where you get to feature him, he gets confident, and you just go from there. All of a sudden you have a playmaker that you know you can utilize, just like a Steven Sims. So,
talking to Benton Smith, Lawrence Journal World, I'm Nick Schwartz. It's Rock Chalk Sports Talk on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. I think that while it would be exciting to see what Daylan Charlotte could provide, like, if there's one thing we're not pointing to as being a weakness of this team, is the depth at wide receiver. And it's just hard for me, like, while I'm still excited to see what this guy could bring to the table, because on paper he should be one of the more talented guys on this team, like, what would Daylan Charlotte's addition to this team really change? You know what I mean? Like, it's not like we've pointed to anything and be like, man, they really could have used him in that game.
Right, yeah. I think that's a good point, because of the receiving depth that we haven't necessarily noticed his absence in the way that you might notice the absence of Peyton Bender or Hakeem Adeniji or someone like that. But I think that, you know, he would just be another explosive threat. You know, Chase Harrell is kind of a deep ball or throw it up and let him outjump his defender type of guy. Steven Sims is, you know, super fast on the outside, and you can either get him the ball deep or get it to him quick and let him make some moves and get going. But I just think that Daylan Charlotte has that. Not to say he could match Steven Sims' production, but I think he has that type of playmaking ability where, like, all right, now if you know for a fact that Daylan Charlotte can burn you the kind of way that Steven Sims does, and they're both on the field at the same time, that's a problem for the defense. So I know this is like the super optimistic outlook on Daylan Charlotte's future and potential, but I think that's what he could be at some point.
Now, I'm going to list you, Benton, the programs in Division I. There are 129 of them. I'm going to list you all the programs who have less sacks on the season than KU. All right, you ready for it?
All right, I'm ready.
All right, Louisiana.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Ah.
Three sacks on the year for KU football. Louisiana Lafayette has two.
Yeah, and one of those was like an intentional grounding sack, right?
Oh, yeah.
I think it was against SEMO, like Daniel Wise basically had the quarterback under pressure, and he just got rid of the ball, and then they threw the flag. So it wasn't even like a real sack. So that's kind of depressing for the KU defense. But yeah, wow, only one. I think I had seen that a couple of days ago, and then I get so caught up with so many statistics I kind of forget what's
right. Yeah.
But yeah, that's a good one.
But it doesn't – it could just – regardless of what you try and chalk it up to, like even if you say, well – the secondary is getting picked on, so they're running these short little patterns that allows the quarterback to get the ball off really quickly. Like, whatever the case may be, like, if you've got that much talent on the defensive line that we know KU has, it just, something doesn't add up, right? It just, even if you're the most pessimistic fan about the talent they have up front or what other offenses are doing to avoid that kind of stuff, it just doesn't make any sense to me how they could be four games in and still only three sacks on the season.
I know, it's crazy. And talking with Dorrance Armstrong and Daniel Wise a couple of days ago, Dorrance brought up that one of the things they kind of addressed in the bye week was just kind of it sounds so basic, but basically Dorrance Armstrong and Daniel Wise both said that when they looked at the film and kind of broke things down with their coaches, they could tell that they were so kind of obsessed with getting to the quarterback that they weren't even paying like enough attention to the one-on-one battle or one-on-two battles. Sometimes it is just that is actually occurring at the line of scrimmage, you know, like they kind of had their eyes on the quarterback while trying to beat the offensive lineman. And that's just, not going to work, you know, 99 times out of 100. So I think that maybe this week off is just what they needed to really kind of take a deeper dive into what's not been working and kind of get back to what had worked last year for them. And Dorms was actually really close to a number of sacks, maybe three or four, West Virginia. And he just, like, you know, he would seem like he would dive.
Yeah.
And the quarterback would move just enough to not get brought down by Dorrance. So, I mean, I think they're close. And, I mean, it's hard to fathom that this is going to be a trend that continues throughout the season just because Daniel Wise and Dorrance Armstrong have so much talent and they're determined guys. And, they're going to have a breakthrough week at some point. I'll probably keep saying this every Thursday when I come on your show. I'll just keep saying the same thing over and over, and eventually we'll all know that I'm insane.
Well, I mean, no, I don't think so, because I'm not even to the point where I think they're going to start getting sacks. I think if you think this is defense and those guys, Daniel Wise, Dorrance Armstrong, if you want to throw Hambe and Bean in there as well, like if you think they're as good as we do, then not only do I think they're going to get sacked, I think we always talk about regressing to the mean when a team starts off really, really hot and then all of a sudden they go on a really cold streak. I think that could be coming for Kansas football because they've got the talent to do it. I think you could see some games in the very near future where they're not just starting to get to the quarterback, but they're starting to create havoc back there. And if that happens, like, it completely changes the product that we're going to see on the field, because you're going to go from virtually that quarterback on the other team doing whatever he wants to being in panic mode, knowing those guys are in his face.
Yeah, that's the thing that really has been lacking for KU's defense, is creating that havoc and that panic in quarterbacks. You know, quarterbacks have looked pretty comfortable, and I think it was really glaring against those in those Central Michigan and Ohio losses, and a little bit so with West Virginia, but. I don't know. I think that you're right with the regression or headed back toward the mean. The talent is there for KU to make an impact with its defensive linemen, and I think they're going to figure it out. It's just a matter of when, and when they do, it's going to make things a lot easier for the defensive backs, and that's obviously kind of the weakest point on the team at this juncture.
He's Benton Smith. Check out all of his work in the Lawrence Journal World and at KUSports.com. Always a pleasure, man. Thanks for stopping by.
Thanks, Nick.
All righty, that's Benton Smith. I'm Nick Schwartz. It's Rock Chalk Sports Talk on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN.
This is Rock Chalk Sports Talk with Nick Schwartz on new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN.
.440 here, new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN's Rock Chalk Sports Talk. I'm Derek Johnson. As talking with John Costco of Pro Football Focus, as we do every Thursday here on Rock Chalk Sports Talk. Last week was a bye week for KU as they were off. Coming into this week now, they get ready to take on the Texas Tech Red Raiders. And Texas Tech, a team that came into the year with a little bit lower expectations than usual, to where normally they're hovering around 6-7 wins and maybe popping up for 8 wins here or there. But this year they're a little more downtrodden. Obviously you lose Patrick Mahomes and the defense just struggled so much a year ago. But it seems like this year they've shown to be a little bit better team. They may not be a team that contends for 8 wins, but they definitely look to be a bit more of a challenge than they were a season ago.
Yeah, Nick Shimonek is really picking up the offense where Patrick Mahomes left it off. He's not as big of a talent as him at this point, and he's not as big of a threat throwing it deep as Mahomes was. But what he's essentially doing is he's able to move that offense very efficiently, and then the playmakers around him are actually better than they were a year ago. I was just looking at a stat which was incredibly crazy. Only 36% of his yards have come through the air. So wide receivers are gaining a lot of yards after the catch. So his receivers are doing a lot for him, but he's not putting the ball in harm's way either. And his offensive line is doing a lot better job than they did for Patrick Mahomes last year. So you're just looking at a much better supporting cast than what Mahomes had a year ago. And then on the top of it, the defense has really stepped up this year. Surprising everybody that I've talked to, you know, at PFF and whether out in the community or whatnot. So it's a really much improved team that we didn't really see coming And they're going to present a very big challenge. I know KU competed in that game last year and it looked like they had a chance to win it when Mahomes went out, but it's going to be a bigger challenge, even more so than last year.
You talked about just mentioning there how they do dump the ball off a lot and there's a lot of yards after catch with the receivers. Talking about that secondary for KU, I know that's something they've struggled a bit with, tackling guys in the open field and trying to limit some of those shorter passes. Is that going to be a matchup that KU is going to need to win if they want to keep this one close and potentially pull off the upset?
Yeah, absolutely. The defensive backs are going to need to play with a lot better discipline than what they've had. That group alone has accounted for over 50% of the missed tackles on the season for the defense. So, they're going to be challenged by an extremely talented group, and that's the unit that's going to need to step up in order for the Jayhawks to have a chance in this game. Even if you get pressure on the quarterback, you're not going to be able to get pressure on every single dropback. You're going to be lucky to get it on 40% of their dropbacks. So if Shimonek has time to throw it, those guys are going to be open, and they just got to make sure that they keep them in front of them and break down and have sound angles and tackling techniques.
We're talking with John Costco of Pro Football Focus here on New FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN's Rock Chalk Sports Talk. David Beatty earlier in the week talked about how Nick Shimonek is a guy that he can move around in the pocket, he can elude some tackles and scramble a bit, not necessarily like Patrick Mahomes, but he does have a little of that to his game, a little more than he would like with his defense trying to shut down Shimonek. How much of a problem can that create for KU, and how good is Shimonek at maneuvering the pocket?
Like you said, he's not as good as Mahomes, and he's about average, I would say. He doesn't have an above average type of player when in terms of moving around the pocket and scrambling for yards. He only has 10 rushing attempts on the season for 17 yards. So in terms of as a threat to run it and stuff like that, you're not going to be looking at him to do that. Obviously you want to keep him in the pocket because when he gets out of the pocket, that's when he can make a lot of those big time throws down the field, which is what he's shown to do. So, every time you face a quarterback, you want to be able to try to keep him in the pocket and make him throw from the pocket, especially a team like Texas Tech who has those elite athletes out on the perimeters and their wide receivers. So if you can keep Shimonek in the pocket and make him force him to throw from there, that's where you can win the game.
Last year when Shimonek came in because Kansas knocked Mahomes out of the game, I believe the score was 28-19. And from there, Shimonek just took off and they exploded, ended up winning that game, I believe 55-19. What in your estimation caused that big takeoff in the score when Shimonek came in the game?
I think one of the big reasons was Daniel Wise was injured. He got injured in that game and left right around the same time. So you losing one of your best interior defenders that was getting pressure up the middle, they stopped getting pressure on Shimonek at that, right around that time. They were obviously abused Mahomes and knocked him out of the game. And then Shimonek was throwing from clean pockets and didn't have to face the pass rush and be under duress when he was throwing the passes. So that was the biggest factor for me. I think, when rewatching that game and going back over the grades and stats, losing Wise is a big blow to that defense, and Shimonek took advantage of it.
With Daniel Wise and Dorrance Armstrong in that defensive line, just three sacks this season, and that's only above not below Louisiana Lafayette this season, who has just two. But besides that, everybody in the NCAA has had more sacks than them. What's going on with the defensive line, and is this a matchup that potentially looks a little bit better for KU?
Yeah, the issue is they're not finishing at the quarterback. Danny Wise is still getting pressure. He's grading positively as a pass rusher. He does have 12 pressures on the season with three quarterback hits, and even Armstrong has 11 pressures with three quarterback hits. So they're getting some pressure, obviously not enough, and then obviously not finishing at the quarterback. Some of that is you can attribute to offenses have been scheming quick passes, a lot of quick passes against them. I know for a number of weeks they were facing one of the top you know, five in quarterbacks in the nation in terms of lowest time to throw. So a lot of those kind of things factor into it. Kansas doesn't blitz a terribly high amount of their pass, pass defenses. So that has a factor into it as well. So Wise is playing relatively fine this year. I think Armstrong really does need to pick it up. He did have a better game in his last game. He had five total pressures against West Virginia, but he's going to need to improve upon that, obviously. And he's been better as a run defender this year, too. So I think maybe the week off will help those guys, you know, work on their technique of finishing at the quarterback and help maybe perhaps defend those quick passes better.
We're talking with John Costco of Pro Football Focus. I'm Derek Johnson here on New FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN's Rock Chalk Sports Talk. Before we move on to the offensive side of the ball, we've been talking all this defense so far. So what's one thing that Kansas will look to exploit from Texas Tech, as Kansas is on defense? They've struggled so far this season. But is there any matchup that KU should look and like in this one?
Yeah, I think so. I think their running game is not as strong, all that strong. And as a run-blocking team, their offensive line really struggles. So they should be able to stop the run pretty well. Justin Stockton is their main running back. He's gained 225 yards. So 224 yards this year so far. So and they only given it to him 42 times. So they can stop the run. Their offensive line really struggles. Not a single one of their offensive linemen grades positively in run blocking. And when you look at Armstrong improving as a run defender, obviously you got Daniel Wise there as a run defender. And then Josh Ahambi and J.J. Holmes, both pretty solid run defenders as well. So that should be a matchup they should win, be able to shut down the run and make them one-dimensional. But obviously when you're looking at a team like Texas Tech, they're going to be one-dimensional anyways as a pass unit. So, but they should win that battle, I would say.
All right, moving on to the offensive side of the ball. Peyton Bender with seven interceptions this season, but he has shown some high peaks for this team in terms of some long balls and some other throws that we haven't seen other KU quarterbacks make in quite some time. What kind of improvements are you looking for him out of the bye week?
I'm looking for him to be improved throwing it deep. He's had some rough patches in terms of his accuracy deep, especially deep middle. He's only completed 3 of 11 passes with two interceptions there. And even deep left, he's a 3 for 10 with an interception there. So deep passing accuracy for him has been a struggle. He's shown improvements under pressure throughout the season. Obviously, the first 2 weeks were really bad. He was having a passer rating of 0 when he was under pressure, but that rose. Since then, last game, he had over 100 passer ratings. So those are the two improvements I'm going to see. I want to continue to see that improvement under pressure and then, having him hone in that deep ball, not get so sporadic as a deep ball passer.
In terms of the offensive matchups for KU, is there anyone out there that KU fans should be keeping an eye on come this game on Saturday? I know in the West Virginia game, you were a soothsayer. You said the running game could have a big game. So let's see if you can keep the streak going.
Yeah, I think you can pass on this team. All their defenders, their defensive backs struggle in coverage. Not a single one of them, at least they're starting five guys grade positively in pass coverage. So that is, you can exploit that. You have, Steven Sims, Jeremiah Booker, Chase Harrell, Quan Hampton. All those guys have obviously Steven Sims is the highlight of the crew, but all those others have shown flashes of good plays, quick, being able to force defenders to miss tackles and getting open. So this is with an improved offense that KU has shown this year with the weapons that they have, that's where they can exploit this defense, because they've actually been pretty solid as a run defending unit. Where they struggle is in coverage, especially the defensive backfield.
We're talking with John Costco of Pro Football Focus here on New FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN's Rock Chalk Sports Talk. So with Texas Tech struggling in the secondary, and we know Doug Meacham, at least it appears early on, and he's even talked about this, he's going to try to do whatever is open. So in the first game of the season, wasn't a ton of running for the KU offense. It was a ton of passing. And then obviously you switch over to last week where it was pretty different with the running game running ruckshaw over that West Virginia defense. Would you expect this to kind of look a little bit more like their week one game in terms of the amount of passing and running and the distribution there?
Yeah, I would say so. In terms of just, you know, what Texas Tech has shown on the film and what they grade out at, they're a very good run-defending team. So you would want to obviously mix in the run to, you know, create some offensive balance, but they are completely susceptible to the pass. They don't rush the quarterback very well. They only have six, you know, looking at KU, only three sacks a year. They only have six on the year, which isn't all that many. And three of them have come from their linebacker, Tony Jones. So the rest of the team doesn't get pressure on the quarterback. Where you want to avoid them, though, is, I was mentioned that they're good in run defense. You know, pretty much across the board, all their players are grading well in run defense. But when you're passing against the team, you have to stay away from their linebackers, Dakota Allen and Jordan Brooks. Those guys have been fantastic in pass coverage this year. So middle of the field is not going to be open very often for KU, which actually plays into how KU likes to throw the ball. That, you know, the passes, they go to the outside and look, go deep. So, you know, obviously the wide receiver screens quick and short, and then and deep, and they even on a deep left or deep right. That's what Doug Meacham likes to do, and so far throughout the four games. So that's where they'll be. You know, you can exploit them, stay away from the middle of that field when you're attacking them in the passing game.
It sounds to me like a lot of points could be in store for this one. Go ahead and give me a prediction for the game coming Saturday.
Yeah, I don't see KU being able to hold Texas Tech down for at least a very long period of time. And obviously, they did a good job of it against West Virginia in the third quarter, but that offensive firepower really took over. It's going to be a high-scoring game. We're going to be looking at something 50-something to 40-something. I don't think KU is going to be able to pull it out. But I think the talent on that team is too much right now. But I've been wrong in the past, and hopefully I'm this week as well. But we're looking probably 56-42 type of score, Texas Tech winning it.
You know, but if that's the end result, that's not a bad ending. I'm sure all the fans would get their money's worth for that one, and plenty of entertainment. Thanks again, John Costco, Pro Football Focus, joining the show as he does every Thursday here on Rock Chalk Sports Talk. Have a good one, John.
Thank you too, Eric.
All right, that's John Costco, Pro Football Focus, right here on New FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. Rock Chalk Sports Talk continues on the other side.
5 o'clock hour here, New FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. I'm Nick Schwert with Derek Johnson. Go until 5:45. That's when High School Sports Weekly will take over with Derek and David Lawrence. After that, you've got Free State Football at 7 o'clock taking on Olathe Northwest. We've got you covered all night long here on KLWN. We talked yesterday about this college basketball scandal and how it's kind of been quiet on that front lately. And that's what with stuff like this where it's mass hysteria initially, and then all of a sudden you run out of new details, you run out of new leads to follow, we just stop talking about it, right? We just completely stop talking about it until months pass and you go, wait a minute, we forgot about that thing. Whatever happened with that? There is, I guess, a new detail today with Louisville and their athletic deal with Adidas and where that money was going. What's this new report that's out?
Yeah, so they just signed a new deal with Adidas back on August 25th, so a couple months ago. It was like 10 years, $160 million. And what's interesting, now obviously, so that would work out to be $16 million a year based on the 10 years. Obviously, all of that's not going to basketball. Like, you divvy some of that up to the Olympic sports, you divvy some of that up to football, and then you divvy some up to basketball or wherever else it's going to get allocated to. The basketball team, of the money that it just went to the basketball side of things, 98% of it went to Rick Pitino. 98%.
How is that possible? Wait a minute. So how much money are they getting per year?
Adidas is giving as a whole Louisville, it's 10 years, $160 million, so 16. But not all of that's going to basketball. The numbers that it figured this out just for basketball, it said in 2015-16, and this is a story in the Courier-Journal, that $1.5 million went to Rick Pitino under his like personal services, while just $25,000 went to the program. And then you add to it the year before, so 2014-2015, he also got $1.5 million, just Rick Pitino, and the rest of the department made $10,000.
See, I had heard that he was making $2.25 from the Louisville deal alone, or from the Adidas deal alone. But when you think about these contracts being in the hundreds of millions of dollars, it seems small in comparison to how much money Adidas is paying them per year. But if you're Adidas, if you're Louisville or Adidas, how do you justify, I don't know who's in control of that. Does Louisville take all of the money and then decide how they're going to allocate it? Whatever the case may be, if that's the case, if Louisville is just deciding, okay, we're giving all of this money to Rick Pitino to funnel it to players or use it to go out and get these guys, and then that's twofold. First off, how could you ever justify that? How could you ever publicly justifying giving the money directly to your head coach?
You couldn't. And here's actually a direct quote from the athletic director for Louisville, Tom Urich, when they signed that deal. It's for the athletic department. It's for these student athletes. It's been earmarked for them. I mean, if it's for the student athletes, it wouldn't just be $10,000 or $25,000. That kind of hints to me that maybe it is for the student athletes, but in an illegal way, based on the other findings we have.
Well, I would imagine it's their deal. They can do with it what they want. If they wanted to give 100% of it to Rick Pitino, I guess they'd be within their rights to do that. But, like, now that this has come out, and with everything else that's going on around Louisville and that program, how could you possibly justify it knowing that if you're going to give it to the student-athletes, you're not giving it to the head coach first? Hey, you handle it, Rick. We'll give it personally to you, and then you deal with how to allocate it. And if they could in any, I mean, this, there were still a couple steps away from fully implicating them, but if you could find, if they were able to connect the dots to the point of them being able to prove that not only did Louisville know where it's going, but we can prove it because they gave it to them, then you've got them giving the money to the players. Now, I don't think they could do that. Like, Louisville can always plead ignorance and say, well, we didn't know. We didn't know what Rick Pitino was doing. There's enough degrees of separation to where they're probably not going to get busted for that. But that's clearly what's going on. And that's why it's so erroneous when you hear Louisville come out last week and say, well, you know, we are appalled by the actions going on and trying to act like they're high and mighty and they have higher standards than that at the University of Louisville. Well, clearly you don't. Like, clearly you knew exactly what was going on. Like, you knew exactly what that money was going to, and you knew these guys were getting paid, and you didn't have a problem with it. That's why you kept Rick Pitino employed, is because you wanted to keep winning. And this is bigger than basketball. This is bigger than sports. This is a university problem.
Isn't it kind of funny? I guess this wouldn't be a very good sense of humor, but isn't it kind of ironic to the fact that Louisville's football coach, Bobby Petrino, like, this is a guy who's gotten in a lot of trouble, too. I mean, you're talking about he basically just quit on the Falcons midseason. He got in trouble for cheating on his wife. He's been bouncing around to different schools, even though he's had so much success because of off-the-field issues. Yet he's just, like, seen as the saint now there compared to Rick Pitino. I mean, doesn't that kind of speak to this whole Louisville athletic department?
I wouldn't quite go as far as using Bobby Petrino and saint in the same sentence. I do get what you're saying, and yes, it does. But Rick Pitino is going to make anybody look favorable when this thing's all said and done. But it does bring up an interesting point back to the original discussion of what exactly comes next, because it has been quiet on that front. Well, Chris Stone, who's been on the show several times, he writes for FanSided, and this is one of the best pieces that I have read on this college basketball scandal since the whole thing hit the fan early last week. And the title of it is College Basketball's Sky Probably Isn't Falling, an FBI Investigation Primer. And that's kind of the connection that we haven't been able to make yet. We understand college basketball. We understand sports. We understand recruiting. We understand these big athletic deals. But what none of us who are talking about this issue understand are FBI investigations. Like, we have no idea how these things happen, how quickly they're supposed to happen, and what we should be expecting to happen next. And the biggest thing that I took out of this piece by Chris Dunn, I would highly suggest going and checking it out. I retweeted it earlier on my Twitter account. But the biggest thing that I take away from this is one line from the attorney. He interviewed, Chris Stone interviewed an attorney that has kind of dealt with this kind of stuff before. And here's what he had to say. The biggest misconception that people have is understanding that for them to have a press conference like that indicates they had reached an important, almost endpoint of the investigation. You do not have press conferences at the beginning of an investigation. And that's, I think, almost, it's like eye-opening when you put it like that and you feel stupid for not recognizing this initially. You don't have a press conference saying, we're coming after you. No, you're not. No, you're not. Because nobody has ever done that ever. Nobody has ever, you don't have, this isn't a college basketball recruit announcing where he's going to go. You don't have a press conference to say, hey, just want to give everybody a heads up. We're going to start investigating you guys, all of you. We're looking for juicy details. You had that. You bluffed when you said we didn't release all of our information. Well, maybe you didn't, but you're still very clearly looking for more. And if you're, and that tells you two things. One, they've probably run out of leads to follow. And two, they don't know where to go next. And they're desperately trying to get people to believe them and come forward with details and getting people to flip. Because if they were able to get those guys to flip, it's one thing for, let's say, Lamont Evans, the guy who got popped at Oklahoma State. It's one thing for him to say, yeah, well, I know what's going on over at South Carolina. I know what's going on at Oklahoma. I know what's going on at Florida State. They're paying this guy. They're paying that guy. This X amount of money is being tossed around under the table. All right, well, can you give us any proof? Do you have any receipts? Do you have any wiretappings? Do you have any of this? No. And the way it works, I know this much. Again, let's go back to my knowledge of how investigations work through television crime dramas. Just saying, hey, we think this guy's paying players is not enough to get a warrant to wiretap him. It's not enough to get a warrant to put a bug in his room. Like, you have to have something more concrete than that. And I'm starting to wonder if the FBI has reached a lot of dead ends, and that's why they had that press conference last week.
I think another good point brought up in the article is that you wouldn't come out and release this. You wouldn't put the onus on these coaches or the label on these coaches that, hey, listen, now you're a cheater, or now all these people are going to think wrongfully of you after you come out with this, because that's one of your biggest plays. Like, that is huge leverage that you have at the FBI to try to get these coaches and these assistants to tell you about what else is going on in the college basketball world. But now that you come out with it, they're known as cheaters anyway, so what do they have to lose from here?
Yeah, and think about it like this. The guys who they had undercover, the guys who they had wearing wiretaps and stuff, they've already been exposed. So you can't use those guys anymore. And it's not as though assistant coaches from one school are in backroom meetings with assistant coaches from other schools talking about how much the other coach is going to pay some recruit that they're going after. So how are they ever going to get into those rooms? How are they ever going to uncover that information? The answer is they're probably not. And another question you have to ask, which is one that was asked initially by most people, is, okay, I understand all of this stuff is NCAA violations. How much of it is actually against the law? How many federal laws are actually being broken here? And as we've discussed, some of them are a little tricky. Some of them are somewhat controversial in the world of law, I guess, if you want to call it that. Because this honest services, this services fraud, which is essentially that these universities, institutions of higher education, are paying these assistant coaches to do certain things. You're going out committing recruiting violations, which means players can't play, which could mean loss of revenue for the school. Like, that's what they're going after these coaches for. And none of us even know what this is, right? None of us have ever heard of this before. How much do you think the FBI actually cares about this stuff? Another really good quote from this piece. The attorney who's worked closely with the FBI for 2 decades, interviewed by Chris Stone, said, and he's just using these names as examples, right? Bill Self and Coach K are big deals to college basketball. And they are not big deals to the FBI. The FBI is probably saying, the reason why they had that press conference is because the FBI probably said, wrap this thing up. Because we have way bigger fish to fry, right? People were saying that. Don't you guys have better things to worry about than college basketball? And the answer is, yes, they do. Yep. No one's dying here. No one is being physically harmed here. The FBI has a lot of bigger fish to fry trying to crack down on the dark underbelly of college basketball is probably not amongst them. It's probably why they had held that press conference, because they were telling them, all right, you guys have spent 2 years on this investigation. It's time to end it. What do you have? Because we can't continue to have you guys working these cases that are ending nowhere.
And they probably figured it was just the tip of the iceberg, and they're like, this is going to take way too long. I think beyond that, they're kind of just passing it along and being like, listen, NCAA, you want to do something about this? Here's the first step. Here's the first information. We did what you couldn't do. We cracked open the egg. You got to make the omelet here.
He's Derek Johnson. I'm Nick Schwartz. It's Rock Chalk Sports Talk on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. I don't even know if it's that, because I'm not even convinced that the FBI cares what the NCAA does. I don't think the FBI is concerned about the well-being of college athletics, right? I think they're concerned with busting people. And if they're not going to bust anybody for anything, right? If you catch somebody breaking the law, yeah, it's your job to investigate it. But I would imagine, even though they presented this press conference as if this is a massive success and they're going to bring the hammer down on college athletics, if we know they're bluffing about one thing, about them having more information, and that this is just the tip of the iceberg, if that's what they're bluffing about, maybe they're bluffing about this thing being a massive success. Maybe when they got this financial guy, Marty Blazer, and they got him to flip and kind of give them all these names, they probably thought they were going to get everyone. They probably thought they were going to bust all of these guys. You did a 2-year investigation, 2 years, and you got 4 assistant coaches? That's it? You got Louisville paying one guy, and it happened a couple months ago? 2 years. 2 years. And you got, like, what, 10 guys arrested? Now, the Adidas stuff, the shoe companies, if I'm the FBI, I'm way more concerned about that. Because while college basketball coach X, Rick Pitino, may not be a big deal to the FBI, but multi-billion-dollar corporations like Adidas and Nike and Under Armour, yeah, that may be a big deal to them. But again, it all comes back to what laws are they actually breaking? We have to be able to separate NCAA violations from federal law. And I'm not sure there's a ton of overlap there.
But maybe the whole reason for this from the FBI, the investigations coming out with everything and the punishments, maybe it just has to do with trying to scare people off, scaring people off at Adidas, scaring people off at colleges. And maybe this will just lessen what happens in the future. Maybe it'll lessen any type of blows that happen from here on out with coaches offering money to recruits, or maybe even just from Adidas or Nike, whatever your apparel store is, offering money to recruits. Maybe it's just kind of a scare tactic.
Yeah, it could be. And again, though, I'm continuing to err on the side of caution with the FBI. And I'm to the point where I'm almost convinced that their investigation, by their own standards, was an utter failure. And that they failed to get any of the dirt or any of the juicy details that they really wanted. And they were forced to give it up. They were forced to pack it in. And in a last-ditch effort with that press conference, they thought, let's see if we can take anybody else down before we pack up shop and move on to the next case. And that's what they're saying by, if you have that, you set up a hotline, you really think people are going to call in? You really think that coaches are going to be calling that hotline trying to save their own butts? I would imagine that hotline has gotten more prank calls than anything else. Right? You open that up to the public, people posting that on Twitter and Facebook, I'll bet you they've gotten a lot of prank calls, and I'll bet you they've gotten very zero information. Now, I don't know like, and I'll be the first to say, I'm eating crow because I said last week, I was saying what everybody else was. Like, oh my gosh, this is going to be massive, huge firings, wins vacated. And I was dead wrong. Maybe next week I'll change my tune again. Maybe I'm being too quick to jump to this conclusion as well. But it's certainly what it feels like. It's Rock Chalk Sports Talk on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN.